Dana Franklin's 26th birthday begins with unpacking books in her new California home and ends with her inexplicably transported to 19th century Maryland, saving a drowning white child named Rufus Whalen. This jarring displacement is just the beginning of Dana's involuntary time travel between 1976 and antebellum America. The pattern becomes clear. Whenever Rufus's life is in danger, Dana is pulled across time to save him. Why? Because Rufus is her ancestor, destined to father a child with a free black woman named Alice. If Rufus dies before this happens, Dana herself might never exist. What makes this situation truly terrifying isn't just the brutal reality of slavery Dana encounters, it's her complete lack of control. She can't predict when she'll be summoned back in time or how long she'll stay. Only mortal danger to herself seems capable of returning her to 1976. Imagine living in constant anxiety, perpetually prepared to be thrust into a world where your very existence as a black woman makes you vulnerable to enslavement, violence, and rape. When Dana's white husband, Kevin, accidentally accompanies her on one trip, their relationship faces unprecedented strain. Though they return together, their experiences differ dramatically. For Dana, every moment is fraught with danger. For Kevin, it's uncomfortable but navigable. The Whalen Plantation shatters romanticized notions of the antebellum South. Dana encounters not just dramatic whippings, but mundane cruelties that gradually break people. In the cookhouse, she meets Sarah, whose three children were sold away, leaving only her mute daughter, Carrie. "He sold all but Carrie," Sarah explains. "She wasn't worth much to him." A cold economic calculation revealing how slavery commodified human beings. Survival demands performing submission. After witnessing a man whipped for answering back, Dana adopts plantation driver Luke's advice. "You gotta say yes to the white folks and smile." This outward compliance masks inner resistance, a psychological splitting that exacts a heavy toll. Most disturbing is how quickly Dana adapts, finding herself becoming accustomed to things that initially horrified her. "I was getting used to being watched," she reflects, "getting used to acting the way they expected me to act." Kindred centers on an agonizing moral dilemma. Dana must ensure Rufus and Alice conceive a child to secure her own existence, yet their relationship is fundamentally one of rape and coercion. Dana becomes trapped between perpetuating violence and potentially erasing herself from history. When Rufus demands Dana convince Alice to come to him willingly or face violent consequences, Dana becomes an unwilling accomplice. "He wasn't a monster at all," Dana reflects. "Just an ordinary man who sometimes did the monstrous things his society said were legal and proper." This reveals how systemic oppression enables ordinary people to commit cruelties when normalized by their culture. Alice's response shows complex survival tactics. Initially defiant, she eventually submits, telling Dana, "I'm going to him. He knew I would sooner or later, but he don't know I'm doing it now because I want to kill him." Their relationship becomes a microcosm of slavery's corrupting power dynamics, poisoning even the most intimate human connections. Butler uses Dana's physical and psychological trauma to explore how history persists in our bodies across generations. Dana's scars, especially the loss of her arm when she tears away from Rufus's dying grasp, symbolize how no one could emerge whole from slavery, neither those who endured it nor their descendants. The novel suggests that understanding history requires embodied experience, not just intellectual knowledge. Dana's college classmate knew Black history, but didn't feel it in his gut. Through Dana's suffering, readers engage with slavery as a lived reality rather than abstract concept. This approach challenges the comfortable distance in historical education. Dana initially believes her modern perspective gives her advantages, but this proves insufficient against plantation reality. After failing to escape, she questions, "What had I done wrong? Why couldn't I have managed to escape as so many had?" Her confidence crumbles against actual experience, challenging our assumptions about how we would act in historical moments of moral crisis. Dana and Kevin's interracial marriage contrasts with Rufus and Alice's relationship while revealing uncomfortable parallels. In 1976, their union faces disapproval but remains legal, while in antebellum Maryland, they must pretend Kevin owns Dana, a charade exposing power dynamics that persist in their modern relationship. Kevin initially fails to grasp Dana's vulnerability, dismissing her fears with, "You're not in any danger, you're white." Dana corrects him, "I'm black, and I'm probably in more danger than you are," highlighting their racially distinct experiences. When Kevin becomes stranded in the past for 5 years, he returns struggling with modern life, smashing an electric pencil sharpener and finding their home unreal. What sustains them is mutual respect and commitment to equality. Unlike Rufus, who only understands relationships through ownership, Kevin and Dana strive for partnership, as Dana tells Kevin, "Not to take care of me, to let me take care of myself, and to stand with me when I need you." Kindred explores the complex strategies people develop to survive oppression, challenging simplistic notions of resistance and complicity. Through Dana's experiences, we see how survival often requires painful compromises that blur moral boundaries. Dana initially judges the enslaved for not rebelling or, after experiencing brutal punishment herself, she develops empathy for others' difficult choices. The novel presents varied survival strategies. Luke advocates outward compliance while maintaining inner resistance. Sarah channels rage into small acts of autonomy. Alice alternates between defiance and strategic submission. Dana protects herself by becoming valuable as Rufus's letter writer, Margaret's companion, and the plantation's doctor, creating moral complications. When she helps Rufus recover, knowing he will rape Alice, is she preserving her ancestor or enabling an abuser? Butler refuses easy judgments about these compromises. Carrie indicates that without Rufus, all slaves would be sold and families separated, illustrating the impossible choices slavery forced upon people. Kindred opens and closes with unhealed wounds. Dana's lost arm and the couple's Maryland journey symbolize Butler's central message. Slavery's trauma isn't merely historical. It persists in bodies, relationships, and social structures. The novel's circular structure shows how trauma disrupts linear time. For Dana, the past erupts into her present, reflecting how historical trauma shapes contemporary realities across generations. Dana and Kevin's Maryland trip represents their attempt to make sense of their experiences. In archives, they learn Rufus officially died in a house fire, likely Nigel's cover for Dana's actions. Some slaves were sold, while others, including Hagar, remain unmentioned, paralleling the fragmentary historical records of enslaved people. Slavery's wound remains unhealed because its legacy continues in systems of racial inequality. Dana's uncertainty about readjusting acknowledges that integrating trauma is a process, not an event, for individuals and societies alike. Butler reminds us the past lives within us, and reconciliation requires ongoing commitment to understanding this inheritance.